Good afternoon. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today, well, if you're in North America, is February the 2nd. And Karen, if we're in Australia, it is what day?
February the 3rd.
So we are just all over the place time-wise. I mean, there's a lot of disagreement on these topics, and by God, we can't even agree on the date to get this started, okay? But in any case, this is a conversation today to clarify some of the issues surrounding this extremely anxiety-provoking topic of citizenship taxation and how are Americans abroad going to get this changed, et cetera, et cetera. And we have four members of SEED here today. I'm John Richardson. We have Karen Alpert. We have Keith Redman, Suzanne Herman. We also have a number of guests from the social media universe, okay, from Keith Redman's Facebook group and presumably from Twitter as well. So what we're gonna do today is begin with a conversation and outlining three basic topics. First, we're being the whole issue of worldwide taxation versus what tax residents are taxed on versus the definition of tax residency, who is being taxed. Then we're gonna talk about the SEED concept of pure residence-based taxation. And we'll talk a little bit about how we would hope that Congress would be able to transition to that. So Karen and I will sort of begin and inviting, of course, Suzanne and Keith to add their words of wisdom as appropriate. So Karen, first of all, how are you today?
I'm fine. It's finally decided not to be a sauna outside, so I'm doing much better today.
Okay. Not only is Karen ahead of us intellectually, but she's ahead of us date-wise. All right. She's one day ahead of us. All right. So Karen, I think you and I have seen a lot of this particular kind of confusion. There was a comment yesterday on Facebook that strongly suggested to me a confusion between the notion of worldwide taxation versus definitions of tax residency. And I'd like to invite you to begin our conversation today to comment on that.
Yeah, so it's a question of, you've got two aspects. What is being taxed and who is being taxed?
Okay, so, let's begin with the what.
The what, so most countries, for their residents, say, we're going to tax your worldwide income. And that makes a lot of sense because, they don't want you to be able to park your money across the border and avoid taxation on it. And they're looking at the whole picture of your whole income, and you're a contributing member of that society. So you contribute by the way of paying taxes on your worldwide income.
And okay, yeah, so
not every country does worldwide income.
Okay. Let's really bore down on the definition of worldwide income. So worldwide income means all of your income from all sources from anywhere in the world, correct?
Yeah, or off the world if you're someone who's got extraterrestrial investments.
Right. As we know, the Internal Revenue Code would require U.S. citizens to include that income as well, right?
Exactly. So,
Section 61, all sources.
Other countries do the same. Any income you have is, part of your worldwide income and subject to tax in most jurisdictions. But the question is, who is it that pays that tax?
Before we get to the who, let's just pause for one second, okay? Because there's a lot of language out there in the world talking about, for example, territorial taxation. What's the difference between territorial taxation and worldwide taxation?
So You all income has a source someplace, right? So if I dig up minerals in Australia, the income I get from that is Australian source. If I have a job in Australia, the income I get from that is Australian source. If I have investments in the United States, the dividends that I get from that are come out of the United States, they're US source. So there are some countries that tax their residents on worldwide income, and some that say, well, we're only interested on taxing the income inside our country, in our source. That's territorial tax.
Could you list some examples of each? Worldwide, just three or four. That's easy.
But countries, most of the G8 tax worldwide income.
So Australia, the UK, the United States, Canada,
US, Canada, Australia.
Right?
Yeah, that's very common. A little less common is territorial. Hong Kong is one I'm aware of.
Hong Kong is one. Singapore, perhaps.
Yeah. So, but that's rarer. Most countries tax their residents on worldwide income.
Okay, so that's great. So that's the first part of this.
I think the other point that we need to make, John, is that if I've got dividends in the United States, even if I'm not a U.S. citizen, which I'm not, the U.S. has the jurisdiction to tax those U.S. source dividends. So a lot of countries tax income sourced within the country to non-residents, to people who are, they're not taxing on the worldwide income of. But you know, if I'm as a non-American citizen, if I invest in Apple and get a dividend, the U.S. wants 30% of that dividend, unless there's a tax treaty to modify the percentage.
Okay, so whether citizen or resident or anything, basically, if the income is sourced in the United States, you're going to pay tax on it, correct?
You're going to pay tax on it unless a treaty modifies it otherwise, yes.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Okay, so that's what income is taxed. Now, the next question I'd like to ask you is, all right, that's great, but what does tax residency mean? So all income is taxed, but to who?
Yeah, so most countries tax worldwide income based on residence, and residence is a really, it's a nebulous term. What does resident mean? I mean, certainly, I've got this house here in Australia. I live here 365 days a year. I'm a resident. That's easy. But say I've got a house in Australia and a house in Florida, and I spend 4 months in each and 4 months traveling in Europe. Now, where am I resident? So resident can, especially at the margins, be a very tricky concept. And a lot of countries do it differently. And I don't have any problem with that. But it's basically, if you look at like the treaty tiebreaker provisions, because a lot of times when you have the potential for dual residence like that, there's a treaty that will govern. And the treaty tiebreaker provisions are trying to figure out which country do you have the closest economic ties to? So do you have a permanent house in each of the countries? If that's true, then we fall through to the next one. You know, where, and they're basically looking at where are your closest economic ties. And the point of those provisions in the treaty is to take these people who could become considered tax residents under the rules of each of the countries that they potentially live in, and allocate them to one or the other so that they're only tax resident in one country and not the other.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you are two main points, I think. The first is that all countries tax on the basis of residency, but they have different rules for what it means to be a resident, correct?
Correct.
And because generally, there's a general presumption in the world of people being a tax resident of only one country. So tax treaties are used when somebody meets the test for tax residency in two countries. The tax treaties are used basically to assign tax residency to one country or the other. Is that a fair statement?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, so we've talked about residency. Now, would you agree that the U.S. clearly has residency-based taxation?
Sure. If an Australian moves over to the United States and meets their residence requirements, they're taxed as a full resident of the United States on their worldwide income.
Okay. So what's the problem with the U.S. situation then?
The problem is going the other way. So the U.S. not only uses residence to determine whether you're subject to worldwide taxation, but they also use citizenship.
All right. Now let's
pause
there.
That's a harder one to change.
All right, now let's
I can
pause.
Change which country my economic ties are to. If I, you know, pick up everything, move to Australia, sell everything in the U.S., don't have any U.S. business interests, it's clear that my economic focus has moved to Australia. And Australia should have the right to tax my worldwide income. But citizenship may not change. And it's harder to change citizenship. And basically what the U.S. is doing by using citizenship as a criteria for worldwide taxation is they're forcing people to give up their citizenship in order to, you know, simplify their lives and only be a tax resident in one country.
Okay. So what I'm hearing from you is that U.S. citizenship is special and unique in the sense that it is being used by the U.S. Congress and the Internal Revenue Code is as a sufficient condition for tax residency. So as long as somebody's a U.S. citizen, they're always a U.S. tax resident, right?
Right.
And therefore subject to U.S. worldwide taxation, correct?
Subject to worldwide taxation
and
by the United
all
States.
All the reporting requirements in the Internal Revenue Code, correct?
Correct.
And all their assets are treated as foreign to the U.S. if they're outside the U.S., correct?
Everything they have where they live is foreign, yes.
And therefore, they're subject to punitive taxation on that, correct?
Yeah, this is a separate problem with the U.S. system. So there's two problems. The first problem is that they're using citizenship as a basis for determining tax residence. But the second problem is that it's a xenophobic tax code.
Okay, meaning?
Meaning that everything non-U.S. is treated with suspicion.
Okay, so would you agree with the following statement? That not only are U.S. citizens abroad subject to worldwide taxation, but that they're actually subject to a system of taxation that is far more punitive than resident Americans who are similarly situated?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Following up on that, there's one other country that is commonly referred to as having citizenship taxation, and that is what?
Eritrea, but it's not the same.
And how is it different?
So it differs because Eritrea's is a flat tax. It's a flat 2% tax. The problem that Eritrea keeps running up against is the way they enforce the tax violates all sorts of human rights laws. That's completely different from the type of tax and the way it's administered, other than enforcement.
But it's basically a simple sort of flat, easy to calculate tax, correct?
How much did you earn? Give me 2%.
Let me ask you a question, Karen. Now, there are many, many people who are renouncing U.S. citizenship because they have trouble complying with the U.S. tax system. In your mm-hmm. view, if the U.S. moved to a form of citizenship taxation that emulated Eritrea's, the great nation of Eritrea, would that be better for Americans abroad?
I think for many it would be.
Okay. All right. And while we're on different possible forms of citizenship taxation, to some extent, I see citizenship taxation as basically a poll tax. I exist, therefore I should be taxed. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I agree with the I exist, it should be taxed. I'm not sure that's the definition of a poll tax, but
okay. I'll leave that for another. Do you think that Americans abroad would be better off if instead of having to comply with this, you know, penalty-laden, horrendously complex system that nobody understands, if they were just assessed, for example, a $500 a year annual passport fee or something, would that be better?
Yeah, that would be much, much easier to administer for the IRS, be a much easier to comply with for the citizens.
So basically, is it your view that the form of citizenship taxation, if it isn't bad enough, that the U.S. is using, is actually even worse than citizenship taxation per se? In other words, they made it about as bad as they can get.
Yeah, they have.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So basically, you know, we're talking about what it means to be a tax resident. Now, let's compare, for example, again, just to reinforce this point. So what you're saying is that because the U.S. uses citizenship for tax residency, it is impossible to sever tax residency with the U.S. unless you renounce your citizenship, correct?
Correct.
Now, let's say a Canadian or somebody from Australia. Does Australia have a fairly comprehensive and brutal tax system, would you say?
Well, we have pretty high tax rates and covers your worldwide income.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is it possible for somebody to sever tax residency from Australia and retain their citizenship?
Absolutely.
Is it easy to sever tax residency from Australia?
It's fairly easy. I mean, if you move to another country and no longer have a house in Australia, no family in Australia, no immediate family. So the people who end up having trouble are the ones who are working in another country. They have an apartment in that other country, but their spouse and kids still live in Australia.
Okay.
Things like that, where you can see that there's still a continuing tie, economic and social tie to Australia that's fairly close.
Okay, so that's great. So that sort of sets the context about what we're talking about. Now, I want to move to part two here, this discussion of what we call pure RBT and the confusion over this. Now,
I think pure RBT, John, is going to be really simple to define. Pure RBT means you don't use citizenship as a basis for determining who's subject to worldwide taxation. Full stop. There we go. We're done.
Excellent. How is that different, though, from some of the proposals that are being bandied about?
Well, so like the Breyer bill that was introduced in November is basically saying, we're not giving up the right to tax you. We're just saying that if you earn income in certain ways, and we're going to expand the ways that are included, then we will exclude that from your U.S. income, but you're still filing something.
Okay. So in other
words, you're
still
a citizen. And if you decide to get into PFIX, I don't think we're excluded. Anything else, or if you make $1 billion on some tech startup or whatever, we're still going to reserve the right to tax that.
Okay. So in other words, what pure RBT means, to be absolutely clear here, is that under no circumstances can citizenship be used as a criterion for tax residency, correct?
Yeah.
It has to be based solely on residence, agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. Now, other than the proposal that you and I have written on, okay, this pure RBT thing, are you aware of any other proposals for change that are actually pure residence-based taxation, pure RBT?
I'm not aware of any that would not claim at least some right to tax non-US source income of non-US residents.
Well, but isn't it also true that all of these other things, a US citizen remains a tax resident of the United States because they're a citizen, but they're essentially given a bit of a carve out in a certain area. Yes, exactly. You're still a U.S. tax resident. You'll always be a U.S. tax resident, but we're going to do you a bit of a favor. We're going to let you include this amount in the foreign earned income exclusion. Would that be accurate?
Right.
Okay. Right. So that's pure residency-based taxation. Now, let's move to part three here. In the summer, you and I did some podcasts and, you know, we independently wrote various posts. And one of the ones I wrote was a proposal to actually how to get there in terms of the legislation.
Right.
But speaking with various people, there's been some concern about sort of transition for existing Americans abroad. In other words, now let's now imagine that things could move to the point where there was a recognition that the US was moving to pure residency-based taxation, meaning from this day forward, US citizens are not, just because they're citizens, subject to worldwide taxation. What, if any, transitional provisions? I mean, how would you get there, given that we've got anywhere from 6 to 9 million American citizens already living outside the country? What are your thoughts on that?
So first of all, I think that the transition issue is completely separate from the pure RBT issue. So you can get to pure RBT and there might be several different ways of transitioning. And then we're just kind of debating the details. And this is where you have some give and take here and there.
Okay.
If you want to know what my ideal transition would be, anyone that's been out of the country since before 2010, when FATCA was enacted, should just be let go.
Okay,
anyone who left the U.S. as a minor or perhaps even up to age 25 to just be let go.
All right. Well, let me pause you there. And I mean, those are I think they're great points. I think they'd also be viewed as somewhat more as conclusions, though. So in our previous discussions, and this is perhaps a bit of an oversimplification, but you would agree, I think, that one could view Americans abroad in roughly three categories. The first being expats, people who are, you know, for some fixed length of time outside the United States, they intend to return. The second being the emigrants. These would be people like you and me, I suppose, who, you know, left the United States permanently at a very young age, are completely integrated to the tax and retirement planning systems of other countries, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. And have really no, you know, zero U.S. financial footprint at all. And the third would be what are commonly referred to as the accidentals, who, you know, don't even see themselves as being Americans. You know, what do you mean? Because I was born there, somehow I'm an American. I don't have a U.S. passport. This never occurred to me, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Wouldn't there be a fourth, John? Sorry to interrupt, but wouldn't there be a fourth? That would be their American pensioners who draw their pension and retirement from the United States and live outside the country.
Actually, that's a good question. I want to talk very specifically about that, because that particular group, I understand from talking to people, and I have heard these concerns directly, do not want a change in the U.S. tax system because they are concerned about somehow being treated as a non-resident alien. You see, if you cease to be if you're not a U.S. resident for tax purposes, then income sources in the United States are treated differently. My answer to that, though, is a simple one. They need not worry. It need not affect them, because anything we're talking about, you know, if somebody leaves the United States, they need, you know, they're going to have to indicate they're no longer U.S. tax residents. So that particular group, they just remain U.S. tax residents under the existing rule. You know, that's it. It's the other ones who, so I don't know that, I don't know that that really is a fourth group, Keith, because,
okay,
you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's a fourth group in terms of concern over any change in legislation, but I don't think it's a fourth group in terms of, you know, really being integrated into the tax system or of another country or something. But perhaps Karen might want to add.
Yeah. And the last comment is, and I don't know if this is a fifth group or this is a whole different subject matter in itself, is that what about the green card holders who live overseas? Would that be a separate subgroup, or would that be included in as American citizens?
Well, you know, that's a different set of issues, okay, for a lot of reasons, and that might be worth a separate discussion. I'm not sure it is really part of this discussion, but let me just say why.
That's fine. I just wanted to address
first it. First of all, to get a green card, you know, in the first place, you had to agree to and want a substantial residential and economic connection with the United States, number one, okay? Number two, the saving clause in the treaties doesn't apply to them. So they are actually able to use tax treaty tie breaks to get out of the US tax system. So I think that they would be impacted by this in the sense that if they ceased residency for tax purposes, you know, the same thing would apply to them. But they're able to get out of this, you know, just through the tax treaty tie break provisions, and American citizens are not. So I'm not sure that I really see them as a group here or not. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Karen?
Yeah, I agree. Like, and if they're not residents and not citizens, they don't come into this residence versus citizenship as a basis for.
Yeah, I would agree. Remember, the U.S. does have residency-based taxation, clearly, because if you're a resident, you know, you're in the system. And that's how mostly I see green card holders.
Okay, yeah, and if you're retaining the green card, it's because you have economic ties to the U.S.
Yeah, and you voluntarily sought them out.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I mean, often at great cost to you. But I think the fundamental distinction is this, that they can use the tax treaty tiebreak to get out. Okay, citizens cannot. So I don't think they're quite the same thing. Okay, now let's talk about, you know, the transition in terms of these, of the three that we've identified, because I agree that the retirees abroad and the green card holders would be impacted by changes in this to some degree, but they're not really experiencing the same kind of problems. So starting off here, it would seem to me, and you know, full disclosure, Karen and I discussed this a couple days ago. It would seem to me that anybody who leaves the United States permanently before the age of 25 or has, I think probably should be out of this completely. And we can talk about that. You know, I mean, it's just common sense fairness. We don't need a bunch of technical tax crap. Okay. I mean, that just, you know, it's common sense. The next group that, you know, then Karen and I in our discussion started talking about, well, what if people left as adults and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Karen, your response to that was something like if they've been out for a certain number of years, or what was your response to that?
Yeah, well, so if you look at the IRS procedures for that they put together for accidentals on renouncing and filing the 8854. And they basically said, look, if you got out after FATCA, we want this 8854 and you have to do all these things. Well, there's a hard date that they've placed. And I think anyone that got out before FATCA, it's been 10 years now. Clearly, they're out permanently. You know, and I constantly get phone calls from people who came to Australia as adults in the 1960s or the 1970s. And they're now finding out that they have US tax obligations. And, you know, the bulk of what they earned here in Australia. Mm-hmm. The US isn't losing anything by them not filing. The US just let them go.
Yeah. I mean, I think
FATCA provides a nice date to hang that on.
Well, or let me propose another date. I mean, one of the issues here is all countries are now, you know, there's a huge proliferation in departure taxes, right? When people sever tax residency, the United States is a particularly brutal, egregious form of it because of citizenship taxation. But don't you think that people who left the United States before the exit tax rules were enacted in 2008? I mean, don't you think they
are? But here we're just debating, you know, the transition rules it's important to have transition rules, but the actual date that you choose, I don't think is of great moment. I mean, it's a question of which one you can justify, I suppose.
Okay, well, what about this is a justifiable principle that doesn't get into a hard date? How about any exit tax rules that apply would apply to the situation as it was when you left the United States?
Yep, I think that's fair.
So in terms of simplicity, let's say we've got three principles here that I think are interesting and I think make sense. The first is anybody, regardless of situation, who left the United States before the age of 25, that's it, done. You know, those who left after 25, you know, whether you pick, you know, that they shouldn't be subject to an exit or transition tax that they left before a certain date, or if they are, or to the extent that they are, the tax should be based on their assets as they were when they left the United States and not on their foreign pension, their non-US pensions and stuff like that. Would that make
sense? Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I suppose there's a third question of if you move to pure residency-based taxation, if you're not in either of those two groups, how should it apply? And, you know, I think that's a slightly different question because I think that most of those people probably would have had notice of these rules. And
true, because they would be
playing around.
We're talking about the temporary expats. And, you know, a lot of them, well, because they're temporary, they've left the United States recently. Right. And they plan on going back to the United States. So then the issue becomes, how are you defining residents, and do they actually become non-residents for tax purposes or not?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a facts and circumstances based.
Yes. Okay. And there are different countries, and all you have to do is look at the OECD has a great chart on this in conjunction with the whole CRS thing. And you can see, you know, right around the world how different countries define tax residency, but they all require some kind of a physical and or economic connection to the country.
Right.
And so, you know, that would be the basic principle. Okay.
Here's an interest, if I may interject, here's an interesting question. And I think it does fall in one of your populations is that I'll just use an example. I know a number of people personally who have lived outside the United States since, like Karen was saying, like since the 1960s, 1970s, they have never been in the U.S. tax system at all since they have left the United States. So if the U.S. transitions to an RBT type of format, how would that affect their lives? Wouldn't they just go on with what they're doing right now?
There I wouldn't think
be, so. Okay. There wouldn't be any other
change.
I mean,
it would depend on the transition rules. So this is what we're talking about. And if the transition rules are like what we're suggesting, then yeah, that type of person, they just move on with their life.
I think that's exactly right. You know, particularly given the fact that I would have to think that a very high percentage of those are people who, you know, left before the age of 25.
So, yeah, a lot of them did. Some didn't, but yeah, a lot of them did. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I think that that sort of, you know, lays out the basic framework and principles of what we're talking about here. But I think what's important before we open this up for general questions and discussion is it's very, very important that people understand that what is being proposed by various groups, all right, is not pure RBT at all. Because anything that retains U.S. citizenship as a criterion for tax residency means U.S. citizens are forever subject to the U.S. tax system. They just have to hope, all right, that the specific rules allow them to not be taxed on various kinds of non-U.S. Income. And, you know, final thing I want to say here is that people always see this only through the lens of their own circumstances. But let's go back to the spring, the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Wyden's thing, you know, talking about tax reform. And he went on for just session after session talking about multinational corporations and the GILTI rules. The simple truth of the matter is that there are many more individuals affected by the GILTI rules than there are multinationals. Another simple fact is that many of those people affected by these rules are Americans abroad who are trying to run small businesses. My message, don't you believe for a minute that if citizenship remains a criterion for U.S. tax residents, don't you believe for a minute that there won't be problems for the rest of your life. The only way to end this, the only way to cure what is frankly the original sin of citizenship-based taxation is to ensure that citizenship is no longer the criterion for U.S. tax residency at all. People have to be residents within the meaning of, you know, whatever rules the U.S. has for residency, and that is not going to be citizenship. Okay, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to stop the record, and we can open this up for a general discussion so that nobody's uncomfortable, okay? Karen, do you want to add anything before I stop recording?
No, I think we just need to underline, when we say cure RBT, we mean that residence only and not citizenship is a criteria for determining who's subject to worldwide tax.
That's right. And retaining citizenship, even if it means that the foreign earned income exclusion is expanded or something, is not going to do this job.
Yep.
Okay, we have fellow seat members here, Karen and Suzanne. Do either of you have anything you'd like to add to this before we end the recording? Keith, any thoughts?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
No, I'm good with what we've covered so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I will do is I will stop the record now and we'll open this up for general discussion.